breakfast puppies?
This podcast contains adult language and content and is meant for mature audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to The Glitter Boys.
Greetings, weary travelers, and welcome to the Inn of the Harvest Moon. Oh, we have got a terrible rat problem in the basement. Can you brave travelers help us? You don't have to do it that way. You should never do it that way.
Well, the other option that we could employ, the good old standby, is starting in a tavern, usually with a bar brawl.
I do. I'm in favor of bar brawls to start adventuring parties, especially when the characters don't know each other.
Someone is always tougher than they actually are. Literally, the term is tough on paper,
mm-hmm.
or paper tiger, or glass cannon.
The glass cannon. That's probably my favorite. It's they got a good solid punch and then they're down.
So, how do you get relative strangers or even friends together around at a table and move them in a direction for a story?
Well, I think we have two areas of discussion here, potentially. We could talk about the nuances of getting a group of players together, and I think that would be a whole other conversation than what we were thinking tonight. So we'll save that for later and just focus on the player characters.
For me, it's heavily game dependent. Most of my Delta Green games, there's this preloaded assumption that you are literally grabbed somewhat as random because you're either on hand, have the specialty they need, et cetera, et cetera. And while you may eventually be formed into a working group, task force, or cell, you are starting out random and literally thrown together and told you got to work together. Recon and other military games, Robotech is another good example. You're part of the same military unit. So some games build that in assumptions. And other games, Palladium Fantasy, Rifts, many others, you can have the Wild West.
Yeah, literally with World Book 14. But starting with a group that already knows each other and is connected under an organization, like a greater organization that they're not in charge of, is probably the easiest way to do it.
Like in the complete game, Chaos Earth.
Yeah.
You like NEMA.
Yeah. You were all part of NEMA. That's one of the easiest ways to do it. Or Delta Green. You have the organization that brings in the noobs. Alternity's Dark Matter did the same thing, that you are all members of the Hoffman Institute. Other things like that that bring them in typically will take one of two focuses. Either the game starts and you're all like already members, or the game starts with the focus of running like an intro for each person to, mm-hmm. you know, Agent Smith shows up at their house and it's like, come with me. We have much to talk about.
That keeps you out of like the group play for a little bit. It does give nuance to each character. And there's a lot to be said for that, for the individualistic starting, because that way each person has their moment and their ability to have who they're playing defined a bit more. And while it is metagaming, it's still defined at the table in front of the other people, so that when you are actually met up and you're dealing with the other person in the tabletop, you know a bit more about them, even if it's outside of it. You know them. Whereas like the opposite extreme, I had a DM who did this once, and it was you're falling. It could be air, it could be jello. You haven't opened your eyes yet. And that was how the game started. it was kind of like, I suppose these days it would be a battle royale video game, but back then it was just, you know, cafeteria D&D.
Did you ever see that movie, Battle Royale?
I never did. No.
Oh yeah, everybody who's into that genre owes it to themselves to go and watch the movie that started it all. It's Battle Royale. Japanese students all taken to an island and forced to kill each other.
Yeah,
and it's intense.
If you've ever read any dystopian young adult novel, you owe it to yourself to go see the original. Mm. Also, we talked about this a couple episodes back, probably about somewhere in the last dozen, session zeros.
Mm-hmm.
And using that as a way to get the players focused on what they're playing. But that also is often a good time to leverage interconnections to the party. Do any of them know each other? How do they know each other? What interests are in common? And by doing so, it gives oftentimes a natural building block to move the party forward. Why are they traveling together? What is their shared common goals? What are their adjacent goals that they'll help each other out on? You know, that sort of thing helps get the band together before you have ever actually started playing.
I like that. And I've distressingly seen, as we grow more and more jaded and the hobby becomes older, players and people running the game both tend to poo-poo like the concept of relationships within the game. I realize it's a cliche. I realize we've all seen it. But especially when you're sitting down with strangers and like they go, hey, like we could have this defining thing between us. I think that's always something to be encouraged. And yeah, it's been done before. You know, of course you're not brothers, but just because it's been done before doesn't mean that something unique can't be brought from that interaction. And I think people who roll their eyes even quietly at that are doing both those players and themselves and the story they're trying to make a great disservice. And I'm really tired of seeing that. It's been very quiet, but
that leads me to want to talk about one of my favorite game starting tools, which is the deck of cards called the backstory cards. You can get them print on demand from Drive-Thru. The backstory cards are a deck of cards that you shuffle, and then before you deal them out, you have everybody sitting around talking all your players. You have them come up with a list of NPCs, important NPCs that they think would be interesting to have in the game, important organizations that would be interesting to bring into the game, events, and locations. And then you use these cards as prompts to connect people to each other and to these things that you've written out and put on the table. Things like you and other player were at location when organization revealed its hand. What did you learn about each other in that moment? Kind of thing. They're all very, very, very fascinating. I love to do them whenever I'm coming to a game with like a very loose, open-ended concept. Like I'm like, I want to run laser dinosaurs. That's all I got. Roll some characters, play these cards.
I think there is also a regrettable tendency to not challenge people right off the bat. And I don't like that. One of the starts that I did, and one of the last games I ran, was taking all the disparate people and just having them travel. And they happened to be within screaming distance of each other in a village in a mountain pass. And that mountain pass came under a massive attack by it was D&D, so kobolds. And It was a narrow place. They were kobolds. There was a gap that stalwart heroes could stand in and defend. And I just threw an enormous amount of kobolds at them.
And if you're
like,
and if they're lucky, they're not Tucker's kobolds, in which case that's what they were planning on having the adventurers do.
But it's just I think threat should be real at every level, and I don't like the rat start. I don't like the easy XP. Your story is ultimately about heroes and should always be about heroes, unless your story is about anti-heroes, in which case that's a discussion you have, but it should never be softballed. It should never be murder. It's like, hey, I'm going to be a party killing DM. But I also think that there should always be the challenges that they could rise to meet.
I'm going to push back on that a little bit, but
sure.
While I agree with your overall point, I believe there is room for the softball start, especially when you are introducing a new game system to a group of players. If they haven't had prior experience with the game system and it's probably a little bit outside their wheelhouse, a softball mm-hmm. start for gelling the mechanics and gelling the players can actually be a good thing.
That, yeah. I think I first saw the concept written down as such in the game Apocalypse World, where that game's approach is each of you makes a character. You do have some initial starting relationships, but the game starts where all the characters are somewhere in the vicinity of a place, and the GM goes around the table and one by one and, you know, back and forth, ping-ponging across, or, you know, in some organic fashion, just follows the characters around for a day. See what they're all about. Find out what a day in their life is, and through that day, develop further relationships as comments are made with NPCs, or these things start to build up. And this, in one day of time, of game time, you've got the foundations of a story that will just tell itself.
I can see that, but I would like to counterpoint to Jacob on, I will say that no one ever flips through a book more feverishly to find the rules and learn it than someone in danger of their life. It focuses, what is it that it focuses the mind wondrously when you're about to be hung in the morning, you know?
I mean, that's why we take the Saw approach to building a party of players. Put them in a room and be like, you need to learn the system in 15 minutes or your nuts are going to be cut off.
I don't know. I feel like the story writes itself as well when there is a viable threat, though. Mm-hmm. And that may be a very old school kind of way of looking at it, but I am old school, and I just had my 47th birthday, and
youngin.
You still have all your hair. I don't want to hear it. And and it's just, I feel that builds the identity far better than we are a military unit. We've all reacted. We've all overcome something. Mm-hmm. And while it may not be, you know, something mighty, it had real consequences. So.
But a military unit immediately thrown into the fray.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. Octoon Cthulhu is a game that I've very slowly been falling in love with as I've been reading the books. And you are a member of, like, an intelligence or a paramilitary organization who goes out and fucks up Nazis. Love it. And there's a threat right there.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I did something very similar with several of my games of Cthulhu Tech, and because they're...
I'm sorry, what?
Cthulhu Tech.
Go on. Expand. Would you like to know more?
You can look it up. It has a mixed reputation for a lot of very valid reasons.
Yep.
And I ran it several times. It was several major organizations are factors in it, and in three of the games I've run of it, players were members or adjacently connected with one of the major organizations, and so yeah, they were thrown into the fray pretty darn quickly. You know, I guess the difference is how it is possible to be heroic on your initial setup, but not incredibly challenging. And I guess that's where it comes up with. Like, even for a softball start, I'm not a huge fan of Rats in the Basement. That's wrong. But something that gels people together in a shared experience, but also is easy enough where they can screw up learning the mechanics and it doesn't cost heavy, is what I look at as a softball.
Yeah.
What about Rattlings that have bandits in their basement?
Oh, so you played one of my Warhammer fantasy games.
I was going to say.
one of my notorious Warhammer fantasy games where you suddenly realize, wait a minute, the GM is pulling for the rats.
I don't know what you're talking about. There are no rats in Warhammer.
Okay, so I'm not on Cthulhu Tech wiki.
Yeah.
Do you know that was also a game designed by Matthew Grau?
Yes, yes,
so I do. So close.
Yep. Something that tends to kind of frustrate me is when a GM is either has their own custom setting or their own custom scenario set up, or they're running something out of a book that, and that scenario has that intro of like, you're all traveling together as members of a thing, and you're beset by combat. Now you're joined through martial, that connection of shared combat in the beginning, the only survivors of whatever. What pisses me off is when the GM doesn't take the time to like beforehand discuss with the players that their characters are going to be randomly thrown together and please buy into this, because when that doesn't happen, you always have one or more player who does their best to fuck it up and instead just like, well, I have no reason to be with these guys after this.
Yeah.
And, well, tell you what, get the fuck up and leave my game.
Yeah.
Because this is the game.
Yeah, he wanders off into the woods and doesn't come back, apparently. So that's the end of his story.
But I know that we can also bitch about those players, but I put a lot of that blame at the foot of the GMs who come up with that cliche intro without first vetting it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's why the structure is so important at that beginning, though, because when you set that tone of shared struggle and you sell it as a real thing, they will naturally come together and pull together, because only death awaits if they don't.
I don't know what wonderful unicorn players that you've had at your tables, Matthew.
Nothing. I'm just really good at scaring people.
I just, years of my life, I have run or been involved in that scenario where some fucker, there's that one who is there just is. Like, yeah. Well, you know, they're the edgelord, the dark elf.
Everybody knows who you're talking about, too.
Or something. And they just have to be the one who goes against. Usually it's the rogue.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Occasionally the barbarian.
In my experience, a lot of paladins also end up like that, where it's like, why the hell would I hang out with you people? Yep. You morally reprehensible cheese dogs.
And I find with rando groups, if I'm running for people that I don't personally know well enough to invite to dinner at my house kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
I find with them it is best to do the you all already know each other because of X event and just go with it.
Having run a lot of con games, I've run into this more than once, and I have my own little theory of practice on how to deal with it when it comes up. Basically, it involves like, great, 100% does not make sense for your character to stick around. What about the other players do they find interesting?
Mm-hmm. Put it
on the player, not the character, the player, for their justification to stay at the table.
Oh, man.
That's actually brilliant.
You reminded me of something I totally forgot about. Years ago, I ran
a dick GM, man.
Years ago, I ran a Shadowrun game that I wanted all the characters together. And I had a story of the person who brought them all together, you know, the mindless voice on the phone kind of thing, or the faceless voice on the phone. And what I did for each of them is we ran the individual intro scene to give them a little bit of individual spotlight moment to showcase how they came to this point in their life. And in each of those scenes, I handed physically the player a plain manila envelope. And in that manila envelope was a note saying, you, player, need to write down the blackmail that I have on you.
Mm-hmm.
That is forcing you to do
this. Yeah.
And I gave each of them that. And then I also put some like personalized other stuff in there. Like, I think for somebody, I knew their character had a kid. So I just like found some, you know, random black and white Target photos on the internet of just fucking random kids. And I'm really glad I lost all those files because they would look really suspicious now.
I have had two groups where I ended up with a substantial chunk of the party being that sort of person. That taught me three important lessons. One, the power of the session zero. Again, I'm going to keep harping on it. It's one of the best ways to avoid a lot of these problems. Two, like I just said, make the player give the reason they're staying.
Mm-hmm.
And three, the other good one that I've taken away was, so you have this group of people. They are in this situation. Too many of your players are the why the fuck am I here sort of thing. I have done major game rewrites and done an entire usual suspects sort of thing, and suddenly the lawyer walks out and is threatening to castrate your nephew. You know, it's just steal from the movie. None of those people actually liked each other. Most of them actually legitimately hated each other, but they teamed up because they had shared goals, and it was half getting out of trouble and half getting vengeance.
Years ago, I ran a Savage Worlds game called the Sea and Shores campaign. And it was meant to be an Age of Sail, Age of Piracy, exploration of a fantastical version of the New World kind of thing. It was a lot of fun. And the way I got everybody to make it was essentially became an upstairs downstairs game where I was like, I got everybody to make somebody on the crew. And then I got them to make somebody who was either a passenger or like an underling or something. And we would go back and forth with different, you know, we would play with the adventuring team and then we would play with the scullery crew. And what I did on the very first session is after we made all the characters, I flashed forward to the future where everything was on fire and they were being chased by strange natives from an island that they knew nothing of. There was a volcano going off. There were lightning bolts happening. One of them is holding a bloody book. And they're like, now, how did we get here? Go back. And that worked. It worked very well.
Another trick I've run two or three times with groups where I did not have a chance to do a session zero is interrupting the game after some significant happening. And it doesn't have to be like a major fight or anything. It can be like they discovered an important clue or just had a major interaction with an NPC and go, X player, what does that remind you about Y's character? And start thinking about that.
I was just thinking that person that we've all described and unfortunately we've all dealt with, what their motivation is for doing such a thing. And while it's really easy to write that off as so chaos and be edgelord, it's almost cry for helpy because they're actually, give them this. They are in their player's mind and they're asking critical questions from their player's point of, from the character's point of view. So it might be an interesting thing to do to almost encourage it for a second. And like, it was, as you were saying, bring it along. And I'm like, how do you do that? How do you turn that back on them? And you know, how do you re-involve that? And I do think, man, it struck me and then we went a couple places and I may have lost it. So this may have to get cut. But I do think that that person has something of value to offer and it's just a matter of getting them to re-engage well.
Right. And like a lot of what we're talking about is, with the exception of the session zero in a little bit, tendency I've noticed in all three of us and also in some of the GMs that I especially like playing in their games, working with, etc., that subverting the tendency of players to expect to be spoon-fed everything and dragging them kicking and screaming sometimes to proactively putting into the game rather than just getting out.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of different tactics to that.
Yeah.
One of the best tools, this is a little tangential, but it's appropriate for this. If you're a GM who ever finds yourself frequently struggling to figure out how to get your players to engage with a game, look into some of the free materials online on assertive engagement. It's a tool that's used for everything from engaging difficult people in the office to mental health to a whole bunch of other things, but it actually is effective in your day-to-day life. I've actually had a couple people who I pointed it out to, and they went, they did some reading, and then promptly accused me of constantly assertively engaging with them because I
Now I got to read it.
Yeah. It's basically an effective way of getting folks to produce their own answers and define their own goals and define the steps to their goals. And while it's super useful in day-to-day life, it can be adapted real easy for the gaming table.
Hmm.
Like, so your player says you want to leave. Okay. What are your player's goals? And, you know, that conversation may come up with something where the player has to acknowledge the fact that their character actually would click with this party for XYZ reason, or it gives you a game as a game master, a hook that you can leverage real quick to lock them in and get them gelled into the party.
I like it.
Sometimes that person is actually looking for the door. They're like, hey, I want to play X, and they have a game in it and they're like, fuck, why did I pick this?
Yeah.
And I mean, sometimes the conversation should happen out, but we're, especially in a younger set, I recall not always being as mature and understanding as I am now and having to deal with folks like that. And it's just, you know, maybe the old hat of, hey, we're going to go in another room for just a second, or, you know, pass a sticky note over and going, hey, are you looking to play something else? Where are you?
I think we have taken this tangent off in a different direction, which is dealing with various forms of that guy.
Oh, right.
That could be a whole other separate deep dive conversation. Bringing it back to getting the party together. Personally, I'm a fan of, you've all known each other before the game, either through an organization or through an implied connection that previously happened. And if I do the, not organization, but the whole, like, oh, you're an adventuring party right now, let's deal with that. What I love to do is then later flashback after the players have gotten the mechanics down and they've gotten used to the basic going here and there and how to do whatever, then flashback and give them some scenes where they meet. That's a lot of fun.
I want to do a real quick special call out to a game we've talked about on the mics before, Beyond the Wall and its sister games, where your character creation is a session zero and involves defining your connections between players. And it's really well done.
No, Beyond the Wall is fantastic. Yeah. I love the whole built-in collaborative creation of the characters. It's great for both long-term games and for one-shots.
I want to draw one thing up into the light, especially since we were talking earlier about maybe some of these characters are, you know, related to each other or have a previous backstory, and maybe some don't. You want to be careful of making sure when you're doing that, that you're not creating an inner circle and an outer circle of players, because that happens a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been on both sides of that. And that's not to say don't allow it, but it is something to be aware of. So when you have, like, you know, three players who are, you know, decide they're all related, and someone who is playing, like, maybe another race or another type of character, make sure that you, as a DM, bring that along as well, because it is very easy to play to the crowd, because that takes care of the most of your players. And that's something you have to be aware of, because that person will begin to feel on the outside, and, you know, that they will have a reason to do so. And you will see, never intentional, but you'll see a lot of bulldozing starting to happen. And that just won't be as fun for that player. So it's something to keep in mind.
And then you have, with that same mentality, with that same bit of advice, another reason for doing the same thing is make sure you don't end up with the chosen one by accident.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because meaning everybody has ended up harping all of their reasons for being here on this one guy. And then mm-hmm. that guy doesn't show up. Or that guy drops out.
Right.
Or that guy yeah. dies in the first session. That suddenly, like, oh, well, shit. Avoid that.
Well, grab a stuff. Yep.
I am chosen one now.
Although you can, if you do find yourself in that position, depending on the circumstances of the chosen one, you can do some incredible, were they really the chosen one storylines immediately yeah. after that.
Or Weekend at Bernie's.
Or Weekend at Bernie's. Oh, you said that, and I suddenly suspect that our Palladium fantasy game is suddenly going to have us dragging a dead kobold around.
Oh.
Just remembering my lawful good necromancer.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, I think we about covered everything, or at least our experiences, our advice.
Some food for thought, definitely.
Again, I heartily recommend folks go out, look for the backstory cards. If that's the kind of collaborative game building that you're interested in, they're amazing. And they even have like flavored variants, like a sci-fi one and a horror one and some fantasy ones and so on. They're worth looking into. Use them many times to great effect.
I was just thinking about some of the later Drizzt books, like The Thousand Orcs, that was centered on the orc nations coming of age.
Mm. Your reading of Drizzt books is way beyond mine.
Yeah, it's okay. I read so fast that it's just, you know, another book. So, but I still say that a huge danger, and, you know, they, of course, they're dealing with the outliers of that danger. But never start them off with a guy with an exclamation mark over him. Just start them off with danger.
Well, folks, if you have any advice on the ways that you think a game should start, or your experiences trying to get an impossible group to work together from the beginning, please drop by our Discord and let us know, or send us an email, or leave us a comment on Facebook or something. You know, we'd love to hear from you.
In fact, I would love to hear some of those, like the problem one solved.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely stop by our Discord.
Yeah. And I guess that's it. Oh, yeah. We got that coffee page. Drop us a few bucks if you want. Help us buy more mics and more Palladium books. Always handy.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you next time.
Good night.
Good night.
Or morning. Or afternoon. Wherever you're at.
Starships. Magic. Mystic martial arts. Romance. All of these can be found in A Cloak of Blades by Isaac Scher. You might have heard my name before. I've done a lot of voiceover work for Breakfast Puppies. And I've recently released my first novel. It's available on Amazon as an ebook and paperback. And you can get it for free if you have a Kindle Unlimited subscription. I do hope you'll support my work as you're supporting Breakfast Puppies. And it's been a pleasure talking with you today. Have a good one.
You've been listening to The Glitter Boys, a Palladium Books fan podcast. Glitter Boys, Rifts, the Megaverse, and all other such topics are the property of Kevin Sambita and Palladium Books. Please buy all their stuff and help keep them in print and making more games. You can order directly at palladiumbooks.com, and their entire catalog is available digitally at DriveThruRPG as well.
Our opening music is 8-Bit Bass and Lead by Furby Guy from freesound.org. This closing music is Caravana by Philip Gross, available at freemusicarchive.org. All sound effects used are self-made or acquired via Creative Commons Zero License. If you like what you have heard, find us on Twitter and Facebook as The Glitter Boys. That's B-O-I-S. And check us out online at breakfastpuppies.com/glitterboys. And also join us on the Breakfast Puppies Network Discord at breakfastpuppies.com/discord. And if you want to help us out, please spread the word and help us build a community. Thanks again for listening. We'll catch you next time.